education, clean air, and traffic. And what has made Metro Atlanta so competitive over the years is we've got the world's busiest airport. I mean, you can reach anywhere from Hartsfield-Jackson International Airport. You know, we're a university center, quote-unquote young and restless demographic, a highly educated 25 to 34-year-old. This is a mecca for folks that look like myself in this room. We've got cheap housing, plentiful land, but you know, what has been an attraction in the past, all these things have brought so many people that we've got traffic congestion that is the number one concern of at least my membership. The Metro Atlanta Chamber has 4,000 companies, about representing about 700 or 800,000 employees, and two-thirds of those companies say that traffic is their number one impediment to doing business. And addressing that mobility need in this region is what I'm focused on every day.
So what exactly is your role at the Chamber? What are the things on a day-to-day basis that you're responsible for?
The Metro Atlanta Chamber kind of distinguishes itself from a lot of other chambers in this region and, frankly, around the country, is that we actually put about almost half of our resources into public policy. Most chambers don't have a public policy division, and we are focused on the environment, transportation, and education. The things that our members say are top of mind for them in improving the business environment. What I'm focused on, about 8 years ago was the Metro Atlanta Transportation Initiative, which was a public-private collaboration on identifying the solutions to the problems in this region. There were 7 recommendations that came out of that. 5 of them have been completed, and there's 2 that are left. One is to have the financial resources that this region needs to build the infrastructure, and the second thing is to have a truly regional transit authority that has service encompassing all of the Metro Atlanta region. Things like the Clean Air Campaign, we can check that off. The creation of the Georgia Regional Transportation Authority, check that off. How planning is done, how projects are prioritized, all that has changed. So what I'm kind of living and breathing in this day is seeing a time when we have a regional transit authority that is truly regional in scope and has the resources that they need, and then for all our different transportation modes, be it transit, commuter rail, roads, that we've got the financial resources to build what we need to sustain our growth.
Now, many of us experience traffic on a day-to-day basis. Can you give us kind of an overview of our current situation?
I suppose, in a word, we're a victim of our own success. 25 years ago, there was an article in the New York Times who was lambasting the fools at the Atlanta Regional Commission and the Census Bureau, who are saying that Metro Atlanta would grow to 3.2 million people by the year 2000. No one expected the population of Metro Atlanta to double in 20 years. We have now, I guess, according to the census, just in last year, we moved past 5 million residents. We're the fastest growing metropolitan region in the country. Since 2000, we've got 900,000 more people here than we were 6 years ago. Atlanta is sitting inside Georgia, which is the 4th fastest growing state in the country. I mean, Atlanta's booming, but so is Savannah, so is Augusta, so is Athens, so is Brunswick, so is Columbus. So our resources are strained, and our resources, frankly, for infrastructure investment are pitiful. We invest in this state in transportation at the 4th lowest rate in the country. So we're the 4th fastest growing state, and yet we have the 4th lowest investment, and we are laying in the bed that we made. Metro Atlanta is the fastest growing traffic congestion in the country. Sometime inside the next 10 to 15 years, we'll surpass San Francisco for the 2nd worst traffic in the country. By 2020, we'll be vying with Los Angeles on the path we're on. Turning the tide on that trend is critical to our success, because while we are standing still, you see Denver and San Diego and Charlotte and Dallas investing rapidly billions of dollars in new infrastructure to support their growth. And in Atlanta, we haven't put anything significant in the ground in a decade.
So along with that, what is your outlook on the future, and more specifically, what has to happen to improve things?
You know, that outlook I told you about being worse than San Francisco and vying with L.A., I mean, that's a current trend. Go back to 1970, and the current trend was going to be that we were going to be a suburb of Birmingham because Birmingham was going to become the economic capital of the Southeast. You know, those projections are based on current path. And the Atlanta region's always been a region of problem solvers. It's been a region of visionaries. And it's a matter of will in order to tackle the challenges that are in front of us. I think you asked me, what do we need to do? What's part of the solution? I think you could say that improving mobility takes, it's kind of a triangle. And there, the three sides of that is capacity, land use, and travel demand management. Capacity is easy. You know, I think everyone understands that. The road's congested, let's widen the road. Too many people are trying to move to this activity center, let's build transit. It's the other two that are sort of elusive, and it's hard to understand them, but they're just as important. Atlanta has a reputation for sprawl. That reputation is well earned, but I think you have to dig down below the layer and understand what's there. This region has some very onerous zoning restrictions. What you see in the skyline behind you, what you see in the neighborhood like Morningside and Virginia Highlands that are in that direction, those kinds of developments are illegal in most counties. We've got five counties in Metro Atlanta where the maximum density for housing is 4 units an acre. That's called a house. Three more counties, the maximum density is 8 units an acre. That's a townhouse. Not only that, it's the exclusivity of the land use in terms of use. So we have to have all the houses over here. And then we'll put all the employment way over here. Oh, and then retail, we're going to put all the way over here. So to take care of our daily lives, we've made it impossible to get by without the car. And increasingly what we've done is that we've made it so that we have to drive so far to do our lives. Walking to the grocery store is an impossibility for 99% of the residents that live in Metro Atlanta. Walking to transit is an impossibility. Actually walking to work or even to do those activities within a 2-mile radius. We've basically zoned it out of existence. And so, you know, going back to, I guess, a triangle analogy, and I'll get to a rhombus analogy later. You know, where you live, where you work, and where you do take care of your lives, where you recreate, where you shop, the closer the sides of that triangle are together, the more time you're not in your car. And this region is actually doing a fairly good job of moving beyond the norms that we established in the 1970s that said putting condos on top of retail is crazy. Allowing people to live near their job is wrong. You know, there are a lot of great examples of that kind of zoning collapsing, going away, and so that people can live, work, and play truly in their neighborhood, at least do two of those three activities. But the political will to make those changes is incumbent upon people like yourselves. I mean, you have to support your local elected officials when they have to make the hard decisions, when the Homeowners Association is screaming at the top of their lungs, no way are you going to allow a 4-story building to be built on the edge of our neighborhood. And when that happens, that means that development, those people that are coming to Metro Atlanta, that means they're going to have to live in Paulding County and drive on I-20 for 15 miles to get to work. In Atlanta, we don't do much of it anywhere in the United States. And that is injecting market forces into our travel choices. California's got a couple of examples where if you want to use a particular road, you pay to use it, and what you pay is dependent on the time of day you use it. There's, I think it's Highway 91 in Orange County. It's dynamic. You know how much you're going to pay to use the road when you get in, and it's displayed on a dot matrix screen, and it's changing every 6 minutes to based on traffic congestions. So the more people use the road, the higher the price goes. You know, right now, the government has a monopoly on transportation in this region and most regions. And at this point, they've kind of become Soviet-era breadlines. If you wait in line long enough, you'll get to use it. But there's no alternative, and there's no feedback mechanism to drive behavior. I'm going to go to work at 7:45, and I'm going to leave the office at 5:15, and there's nothing besides traffic congestion to influence that. So any decision that we can make in Metro Atlanta that marries two of the three of those things, land use, new infrastructure, or travel demand management, we've got to grab onto that with both hands and embrace it, even though it's going to be something different from what we're used to, which is getting on a free road and driving 15 miles to get home.
Well, that's a good segue. Let's talk about some actual proposed solutions. I want to get your opinion real quick. Start with the Beltline.
The Beltline. Oh, what a pork barrel. I'm sorry, my friend Heather Aldehef from the city's here, so I had to make a stab. Is everyone familiar with the Beltline proposal? I heard at least a couple of no's. Part of the Beltline is a ring of mostly abandoned railroad right-of-way that goes around the city of Atlanta.
And, in fact, and some of it right in this parking lot.
Part of it crosses Monroe right here at 10th, right by 10th Street. You go over the old train tracks. And it was at a time when it was built in a time when Atlanta City, that's where all the factories were, all the way around the city, and that's how the goods got to and from the factory. And so the proposal is to actually turn those into a transit line and a series of parks and trails that goes all the way around the city, married with an overlay zoning that encourages higher density mixed use development, i.e. you got retail and employment in the same place that you have housing. So the progress on that has been pretty good. There's a what's called a tax allocation district that's been set up for it. So any increases in property value are set aside. Those tax revenues are set aside to help pay for infrastructure investments. You know, in terms of that triangle we were talking about, it's just a perfect example of marrying new capacity with land use. I mean, this is an incredible land use play. You know, it is purported that 80 to 100,000 people could live and work on this belt line that goes around the city. And it's a new infrastructure married with good land use that's going to drive down those trip lengths. And it's a great development opportunity for the city of Atlanta.
Okay. How about the Peachtree Road trolley?
As I understand it, it's a proposal to put a streetcar on Peachtree Street, and it would go for all the way from Fort McPherson on the south side of town on what is now called Lee Street, and would go all the way up through downtown, midtown, and up into Buckhead and stop somewhere around the Brookhaven MARTA station. Similar to the Beltline, probably not honestly with as much potential as the Beltline, but again, it is a marrying a new transportation infrastructure with a land use play. It's the streetcar is just part of the project, because the project is three or four blocks in each direction in terms of changing streetscape and pedestrian access, and it's going to allow people to move easier as Peachtree Street and that entire corridor continue to get more and more dense.
Certainly makes downtown more attractive and also using use of MARTA a little easier. Is that right?
Actually, I think that, you know, just from day one, if it opened tomorrow, MARTA would have like 2,000 or 3,000 more riders a day. Just because that access would allow people to make those short trips on the surface street and not have to use the MARTA and the MARTA stations, which are often a half a mile apart.
Okay. All right. How about a highly political one, the Northern Arc?
Again, it's sort of an awareness. Most people know what the Northern Arc is. A couple shaking heads. Back in the Barnes administration, there was a project that was moving forward which would build probably a toll road that would go from I-85 in Gwinnett County, sort of near the Sugarloaf area, and would go, and then it would kind of proceed to the west, cross I-985, Georgia 400, I-575, and then connect with I-75, potentially going actually all the way into Rome with a limited access highway. It's roughly along the alignment of Georgia's Highway 20. At the time, the project was sold as a congestion relief project for I-285, and frankly, it wasn't. It wouldn't do anything for I-285. And there was a lot of political and environmental resistance to putting that road in there. It's a mixed bag. I mean, Highway 20 is a wreck. If you're ever contemplating driving from 75 to 85 on Highway 20, just think again. I mean, it's one of the most dangerous roads in Georgia in terms of like deaths per vehicle mile traveled. It's the worst road, and it's unsafe. It's narrow. There's parts of it that are like winding, and you can like fall off a cliff. I mean, something needs to be done up there. At the same time, that project needs to be taken into, you know, if that project is meant to be a congestion relief project, then it needs to stand on those merits. And in terms of I-285, it's not going to do anything for it. This is a greenfield development project. It's going to help an unsafe road, and it's going to help move traffic across North Georgia. The day it opens, I doubt anyone would ever blink and notice any change on I-285.
Another good segue. So how about 285? What is on the horizon for that highway?
Well, frankly, not a lot. The sad part about, you know, having the fourth lowest funding in the country in terms of new infrastructure is that the Department of Transportation and the regional planners are in the process now of stripping out half of the road capacity out of the long-range plans. $5.5 billion in projects are going away. Transportation funding is down. We're just not getting the money from the feds that we expected. And construction costs are 30 to 50 times higher than they were just 3 years ago. So, you know, how that's going to shake out is questionable. Whether 285 in any segment is going to get significant investment. That's sort of the gloomy side. The silver lining is that there's actually new thinking about public-private partnerships in Georgia. And that would be allowing private companies to bring their capital to the table in an exchange for getting a piece or a majority of any toll revenues that would be collected on a road. This is just my opinion, but I think we have to accept the reality that any limited access highway capacity that's built in Georgia is going to be a toll road, period. It's the only way that you can build them, given the costs today. But not only that, I think it should be embraced because, again, a toll road that collects tolls, that gives feedback into people using it, is travel demand management. It's letting market forces drive behavior. Now that those kind of proposals are on the table, things that are, you know, one of the things that is possible is almost self-funding roads on things like 285. Part of that alignment honestly, it's probably going to have to be double-decked. The cost of going up is cheaper than going wider on the top end. You just can't knock down too many $500 million hotels and justify the cost of going wider. So the future is murky, but it's a little bit of bright with the kind of the new financing mechanisms that are on the table.
Okay, how about any other proposals I haven't mentioned or we might not really be aware of at this time, or anything new out there?
Well, we might get to it later in terms of what's talking about transit, if we're going to talk about that.
That was the next question, yeah.
If you want to talk about road capacity, one thing that has been contemplated and, frankly, it probably holds some of the most promise is truck-only toll lanes. And talk about a win-win. As much as you don't like driving next to a tractor trailer, they don't like driving next to you. I've sat in so many Motor Trucking Association meetings and listened. They hate cars. You cut them off, you slam on your brakes. Cars just behave differently than trucks. They would love to have their own lanes, and we would love to have them to have their own lanes. But not only that, putting them in place, given how much trucking traffic is going to increase, and truck traffic is going to increase somewhere between 65 and 100% in the next 15 years. That's how fast the Port of Savannah is growing. You could cut traffic congestion by 20% on the interstates if trucks had their own lanes. And the ability to toll the value, the time savings for them is, again, a financing vehicle for that. It's going to take a lot of political will, especially if they're tolled, because the Motor Trucking Association is not going to like that very much. And when they say they pay a disproportionate share of the motor fuel tax, they're right. So that's going to be a heated debate, but the potential is huge. That's probably one thing that we haven't talked about.
Well, let's move on to MARTA. And is there ever a chance that people in this room will use it on a regular basis? It's a little different question than I told you, but
who got here using MARTA? You're lying, aren't you? Yeah. Who used MARTA in the last week? All right. We're about 5%. Why? Why? Well, it's actually rather to the rest of the audience. Why didn't you use MARTA in the last week? Okay, doesn't go where you live. Doesn't go where you work. It's not competitive on time. Well, if it doesn't go where you want to go, that's the perfect example. We did some market research a couple of years ago on transit and what would make people take transit, and time was the number one driver. If transit was competitive with automobile traffic or the automobile travel, most people would take it. Actually, there's a preference for it. Where I used to live before where I live now, I took transit every day because it was faster than driving. If you can marry that with some free parking on one end and minimize transfers, making sure that the ride is comfortable, most people will take transit. That just simply, we don't have the infrastructure in the ground that takes most people anywhere close to from where they live to where they work. So part of fixing that solution is getting some infrastructure in the ground. The other part of that solution is MARTA never married land use with that investment. Or the marriage of that was spotty. The fact that we have MARTA stops that sit in the middle of single-family home neighborhoods and there's nothing but single-family homes within half a mile, that station should never have been built. Arguably, that line should have never gone in that direction. The ability to have high density near our station areas, there isn't any. And so, in terms of maximizing our current system, we've got to change the land use policies around the station areas so people can actually live and work there. And there's been progress made on that front. But also, any new infrastructure that goes in place has to have that same land use. We have to bring land use reform in when we bring those kind of transportation infrastructure investments. You know, I think the future of transit is bright. There was a new body that was created about a year ago. It was called the Transit Planning Board, which followed after a study. You know, basically said, we don't have a transit vision for this region. And they have two tasks: to create that vision and then bring a proposal to unify all the transit systems in the region into under one umbrella. Creating a plan is easy. Getting the political will to unify and fund that plan, that's going to be harder. But we haven't even been talking about it in 30 years. You couldn't get a Cobb County commissioner to sit down with a MARTA board member and talk about unifying the system, you know, since like 1964. So the fact that that's going on right now, I think that's very bright. But again, it's about, you know, this citizens in this room and other places. We have to let our political leaders know that we're supporting them, having those discussions, talking about what would it look like if we had a unified transportation vision and funding in this region. There's some phenomenal transit lines that could be built. And we've talked about the Beltline. It's huge. Putting light rail or bus rapid transit up Buford Highway or Terra Boulevard or Cobb Parkway, you're talking about 20,000 riders a day, opening day. That's before any land use reform came in. The potential's there. We're just sorrowfully low on funding. And that's what I work on every day. We had a piece of legislation in this session. It didn't get out. We'll be back next year to push on it again. But in a region like this where we have a regional economy but no regional funding mechanism for transportation, we need to fix that. Because Dallas does, and Denver does, and Charlotte does. They're all, Tampa does. They're using regional transportation funds to leapfrog their infrastructure ahead of their growth, and we're sitting still. So we'll be back in 2008 to allow, you know, pushing for a proposal to allow the Metro Atlanta region to vote to increase their sales tax in order to create a pool of funds that could be earmarked for things like express toll lanes and truck-only toll lanes and new transit lines and frankly, fixing bad intersections like that one over there. So I hope I answered your question.
That was good. We have time for maybe two, maybe three questions if anybody's real excited. Come up to the microphone here, or if you're up front, you can come use this microphone. So,
does the state have the legal authority to force MARTA into Cobb County?
Not currently. I mean, the MARTA Act was a two-stage thing. I mean, first five counties had to ratify the MARTA Act, which Cobb never did. Cobb never acknowledged MARTA. The second part was that the counties then had to approve the funding mechanism. So when the vote was held in 71, it passed in Fulton and DeKalb, but it failed in Gwinnett and Clayton. So Gwinnett and Clayton are part of MARTA, and they have seats on the MARTA board. But they don't fund it, so they only have one representative, and there's no MARTA service there. So you're talking about a two-step process. First, you'd have to get Cobb to join MARTA, and then you'd have to get Cobb to pass a sales tax. And I don't think the appetite's not there to pass that sales tax for Cobb County. Because if Cobb County did that, they would lose their ability to have a special sales tax in their county, which they currently enjoy. And that's how they're building jails and courthouses and all the road improvements in Cobb County. So, I mean, honestly, in terms of progressiveness towards transit, I mean, Cobb's pretty progressive about doing it. Every year they're adding more bus services up there, and they're paying for that out of the general fund. rapid transit is coming up I-75, and that'll be built out in probably the next 5 years. But that funding is still not enough to build what we need for that county or any other county. Did I answer your question?
Who do we call, email, who do we talk to get this kind of thing started? If you're talking about political will, you're talking about organizing people who are willing to speak up. What do? Who do we talk to?
Well, that's a great question. First, I would suggest that you don't spam them to death. We tried that, and it didn't work very well. What part of town do you live in? You live in Duluth. So if you're in Duluth, that means that Charles Bannister is your county commission chair. And you'll also have a different commissioner, but I'm sorry, I don't know who that is. You know, Charles Bannister is a great regional leader. He's a great regional thinker. And he's a great regional thinker who's used to getting kicked in the teeth by the Gwinnett Daily Post and his Chamber of Commerce and every neighborhood association anytime he ever talks about doing something outside of his county. So, you know, despite what we think, they're human. And we all like to be told we're doing a good job. So I'd start with talking to your county commissioner and your commission chair and letting them know that you appreciate what they're doing for regionalism. And that you know that we're woefully underfunded on transportation. And you'd appreciate anything they could do to address that issue. But you're going to have to do the same thing with your state legislator, your rep, your senator, and the governor. And they're going to have to hear it literally hundreds and thousands of times before realize that most people, I mean, it's sad to say, I mean, I don't like paying the tax man any more than anybody else, but my time is more valuable than an extra penny on my chicken biscuit in the morning. So... We should tax biscuits. I don't really care what the funding mechanism is, whether it's a gas tax or a sales tax or we tax biscuits. In the next 25 years, we're going to spend $5.5 billion less than we thought we were, and we're still going to get worse then. And there's no substantial transit investment coming. We're in trouble. Money isn't the whole solution. We've got to fix our land use. We've got to start embracing things like toll roads. But every taxpayer is going to have to reach into their pocket if we're going to start. You know, it really is. Someone says it's either your mobility or your money. Choose. I don't want to spend an hour and a half going to work. And when more people, when 20 and 30% of the population is spending an hour and a half going to work, people like that are sitting in this room, they're going to go to Charlotte. And so are the jobs.
Okay, Brian, you're depressing me. I don't want to hear anymore.
One more question. So, this is from Liz, who's doing something about it.
We're doing something about it. I want to talk about, this is all kind of negative stuff. You know, traffic is bad in Atlanta. Okay, we're doing stuff about it, though. And what we need to really focus on is what's happening. We have Clean Air Campaign. We have 8, 9 now transportation management associations all working with employers, employees, residents to try to encourage alternative commute options. It really is about choices, too. It's about where you live. It's about where you work. It's about if you need to relocate your home or your office, that might be an option for you. Traffic does suck. Atlanta is growing, but there are options. I do work with FlexCar. That is an option. It just kind of adds to, okay, well, I can't take transit because what if? Well, your what if might be, you know, you got a car sitting outside your door now because we got 61 vehicles in Atlanta that you can just pay for by the hour. That's just one alternative transportation option. But I always hear this focus on traffic sucks in Atlanta and so bad. You know, we're not going to attract people to Atlanta and companies to Atlanta by focusing on the negative. We got to talk more about what is happening out there and what we're doing to change things. And I think there's a lot of good positive stuff going on right now, and that's what we need to focus on. So,
I do agree with you, Liz. There is a lot of great things that are going on, and there's a lot of there's a lot of ingenuity going on. And I'm not trying to paint a completely bleak picture. But we've been afraid for too long to talk about the problem. I mean, everyone whines about traffic. Everyone whines about traffic everywhere. But no one has been willing to step up and say, we need $10 billion inside the next 8 years.
So let's increase that's gas lot, prices, that's increase a lot parking of, costs, and
that's
we'll
a lot
there.
Of political. That's a lot of political will to raise that kind of
and
money.
More biscuits.
Tax biscuits. FlexCar is good. TMAs are good. $10 billion is better. We have to get the funding.
Let's raise
we have to
prices.
Find the mechanism to do that, and we have to find the political will. And right now, we have elected officials who are not hearing from people that they say, we've got to invest more. What they're hearing from is people asking them to take no tax pledges.
Well, thank you, Brian. I really do appreciate it.